Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Friday, April 28th. Yesterday, we talked about President Biden's reelection campaign, which he officially launched this week, and the road ahead for him, including presumably his glide path to at least the nomination, with only RFK Jr. and Marianne Williamson challenging him and both considered very minor threats. The Republican primary field is more interesting, despite the reality that Donald Trump remains the big dog, at least so far. Quite a few pretty major Republicans are entering, and we'll talk mostly in this segment about four of them who are not named Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis. They are Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, Asa Hutchinson, and Vivek Ramaswamy. And we're going to talk now mostly about their ideas, not so much polls or whether they can actually win the nomination. To help with this, we welcome back Amanda Carpenter from The Bulwark, the news and politics site founded after the 2016 election by some never-Trump conservatives, we might call them. Amanda Carpenter herself is the author of the book Gaslighting America, Why We Love It When Trump Lies to Us. Her prior conservative and Republican Party credentials are strong and many. She was Ted Cruz's communications director and a speechwriter for South Carolina Senator Jim DeMint. And before that, she worked as a reporter for the conservative news organizations Human Events, Townhall.com, and The Washington Times. Among her recent articles on The Bulwark are ones called Tim Scott Looks at Joe Biden and Thinks Civil War, and Nikki Haley Wants to Talk About Abortion, Just Talk, Though. So we'll talk about those two candidates and the other two. Amanda, we appreciate you doing this with us. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And let's start with Nikki Haley. She is the former governor of South Carolina, and she was Trump's UN ambassador, for people who don't know those bits of her background. She's of Indian descent and the only woman in the Republican primary race. And she made news this week by trying to stake out a position not exactly like those we usually hear in either party on abortion rights. Here's the argument she's basically trying to make.
My goal as president will be the same as it was when I was governor and ambassador. I want to save as many lives and help as many moms as possible. We should be able to agree that contraception should be more available, not less. And we can all agree that women who get abortions should not be jailed. A few have even called for the death penalty. That's the least pro-life position I can possibly imagine.
Nikki Haley on abortion rights this week. Amanda, what did you make of that?
Well, what's remarkable about the speech is how she declined to talk about the real specifics that divide candidates in a Republican primary. The clip that you played, yes, among the broader electorate, I think she's right. Those are consensus positions. And the framing that she has adopted, that it is her goal to save as many lives as possible, that is how I would exactly advise a Republican candidate to talk about their position. The problem is that she was delivering that speech at the headquarters of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, which is a anti-abortion advocacy group that very much cares about the specifics of where a candidate lies when it comes to, you know, things like gestation limits, abortion exceptions. And that is something she steadfastly refused to talk about. And so it is sort of an admirable rhetorical exercise that she is displaying in trying to reframe this debate. But even the things that she describes as being broadly popular, like, you know, broader access to abortion, no jail time.
You
or
mean
death penalties
to
for
contraception,
women.
Right? To contraception. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are not wholly consensus positions in a Republican primary, and
right.
They're not wholly consensus positions to people who she was addressing in that room.
And in terms of if she were to get the nomination and try to present herself as a consensus candidate or an arbitrator on abortion rights more than a policymaker, as I think you described her attempt here in your article. She still talks about it in a way that will make most pro-abortion rights people cringe, right, about saving lives, even using that language, equating fetuses with born human lives, and about supporting moms as if ever removing their choice regarding a pregnancy is doing anything for them rather than to them. So I don't know who exactly she appeals to here.
It's very confusing to me, and this is where I sort of landed on the conclusion. This is why she wants to have a, you know, conversation about the subject rather than articulating any kind of clear position. It seems obvious to me that she wants to give herself a broad lane to navigate in should she advance in the Republican primary and maybe, you know, in her mind, make it as a presidential candidate. But the key question that the advocates at this group she was speaking, they came away from the speech talking to the press, lauding her for adopting a position against abortion after 15 weeks. What's curious about that is that her spokesperson then emailed other reporters saying, no, she did not adopt that position. She is, you know, against late term abortion and wants to have a conversation about it. And so there's, you know, this is very niche, you know, primary within a primary kind of subject, but it is determinative in a lot of respects in the Republican primary contest. And so it's very interesting to me that the SBA list is saying, okay, she's good on this position. But just weeks before, they blasted the Trump campaign because the Trump campaign issued a statement saying that abortion should be left to the states, which the head of that group called a morally indefensible position. But then even if you look at Nikki Haley's speech, she sort of talks about how it's good that red states are adopting, you know, restrictive abortion policies, which is a nod towards saying this is okay to leave to the states. And so that's a long way of saying it's very confusing, but I think it's broadly indicative about how Republican candidates simply don't know how to navigate this post-Dobbs environment and landscape. And so maybe that's why she's saying, I'm not committing myself to any position because I don't want to get bogged down on this. And this is sort of something that Nikki Haley is known to do. If you look at her position about Donald Trump before and after January 6th, she does adopt this kind of, you know, she'll say she's framing it and she's open to all opinions, but here's where she personally is and seeks to provide sort of personal private assurances to conservatives that she'll do what they like while leaving herself as much room as possible in public. And that is where the confusion lies, I think, with the head of SBA Pro-Life. Even today did an interview with the Washington Post because their reporters were confused by this. And she says, well, I just personally believe that Nikki Haley would support a ban after 15 weeks. And they're saying, but she did not say that. And her spokesperson said otherwise. And for some reason, the head of SBA list just said, well, I believe that's what she'll do. Which is just a very strange thing to me, considering this is their only subject. And right. It may be because they're so desperate, and I'm really reading between the lines here, to have a woman on the national stage be unapologetically, at least in terms of projection, pro-life. And they are so eager to have a persona like Nikki Haley just talk about the subject that they will give her wiggle room. But that is just what I'm sort of seeing.
Let's go on to Tim Scott, also from South Carolina, like Nikki Haley, and he's currently in the Senate from there, and he's the only Black Republican in the Senate. And in his announcement video, he went right to the issue of race. But before we play a clip, your article on this announcement video is called Tim Scott Looks at Joe Biden and Thinks Civil War. What's your premise?
Well, here's the mismatch. It comes from his announcement video, which was filmed at the location of Fort Sumter, where he is talking about how the first shots of the Civil War were, of course, fired there. And that was a test in terms of what we would be as a nation and whether we would remain unified. And the way that he segues through this is that we are once again being tested, and Joe Biden implicitly is sort of represents the next coming of a new civil war. And Tim Scott has a very good reputation in the conservative movement as a very, you know, affable person that a lot of people like to be around, a good public speaker, in the sort of politician that makes other people feel good. He has a great story about how he pulled himself up from his bootstraps, was raised in a really rough household, had a Chick-fil-A manager who mentored him, and just a really great American story. And so for him to adopt that position, I understand we live in polarized times, but to suggest that Joe Biden and the Democrats are waging a new civil war, I found that sort of shocking and not at all in keeping of what kind of person he has publicly positioned himself to be so far.
So here's a clip from that announcement video by Tim Scott.
Joe Biden and the radical left have chosen a culture of grievance over greatness. They're promoting victimhood instead of personal responsibility, and they're indoctrinating our children to believe we live in an evil country. And all too often, when they get called out for their failures, they weaponize race to divide us, to hold on to their power. When I fought back against their liberal agenda, they called me a prop, a token, because I disrupt their narrative. I threaten their control. They know the truth of my life disproves their lies.
Tim Scott, from his announcement video that he's forming an exploratory committee to run for president. Who's he appealing to with that, Amanda?
Well, I think there is a lot of appetite among Republican conservative type voters who have already to hear more about the culture war. Well, let me just put that very broadly, which sort of encompasses a lot of the stuff that's happening, you know, the debate that's happening over transgender issues in school, DEI, ESG, you know, the alphabet acronym that you hear about a lot, CRT. And so he is nodding to all of that and saying, yeah, I am eager to delve into these issues. And he often brings up how, as a Black Republican, he has encountered a lot of discrimination and nasty stuff from the left. That those are messages that Republican voters are eager to hear, because they very much, you know, and typically in every presidential election, there are a few minority candidates. For some, you know, whatever reason, they don't get to a high position in the polls. But this is sort of a consistent mainstay in a Republican primary. And he is certainly nodding to all that and displaying that he is very eager to talk about his background as a Black man, as a Black Republican. And Republican voters are very receptive to that.
And when you say Republican voters, that, of course, is overwhelmingly white voters. In presidential elections, only about 10% of Black voters have been voting Republican in recent elections. So like you said earlier, that Republicans who are against abortion rights love the idea that Nikki Haley would be a woman on the national stage who's against abortion rights. Is it that a lot of white Republicans look at Tim Scott and say, wow, they're not going to be able to accuse us of racism anymore for these positions that they usually accuse us of racism for if Tim Scott is up there saying it?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big element of that. I mean, but, you know, Tim Scott, he is, you know, a success in his own right. He went to the House, got appointed to the Senate, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, maybe by Nikki Haley. But it is important. Maybe we should talk about Nikki Haley and Tim Scott a little bit together, not because they are, you know, minority candidates per se, but because they both represent or have represented South Carolina, which is in a very important state in the Republican primary. And so I think there's a strong case to be made that they're both playing for a VP slot. If you look at how the Republican primary is set up, they're not doing great in the polls. Being able to hold on to, you know, 5% or 10% of voters going into South Carolina that they could potentially throw to a Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis to put them over the top, that is very, very significant at that late stage in the game. And so I think they should be considered, you know, not as, you know, sort of failing presidential candidates, but potentially very strong vice presidential candidates. And yeah, if you want to talk about the hunger that Republican voters have for those debates, either one of them would be very fine matchups against Kamala Harris.
Interesting. And how different, though, is the clip that we just heard of Tim Scott to your ear than say, dare I mention the name, Tucker Carlson, when Carlson would say on Fox that there is no such thing as a white supremacist threat in the United States. And of course, he gets labeled a racist for that. Is Tim Scott really saying the same thing there when he talks all about personal responsibility? There's no oppression in America. We're not a racist country, all of that.
Yeah, you're getting to another trick that I think both, I don't want to say trick, but rhetorical pivot that both Nikki Haley and Tim Scott have adopted really well coming up through South Carolina politics. And the pitch goes something like this. And you see it in almost every one of their ads, even this ad with Tim Scott. The pitch says something to really highlight their background, you know, as a minority and facing discrimination personally in their lives growing up. Nikki Haley talks about her father having the cops called on him. You know, Tim Scott has lots of stories that are similar. But then they'll pivot and say, and even this phrase directly, both of them, America is not a racist country. So they'll say, I have suffered discrimination. I've seen racism up close. My family has suffered from it. But America is not a racist country. And I think that's a really interesting pivot. I don't think it's been scrutinized that closely, mm-hmm. but certainly in South Carolina, it's worked very well for them.
Well, before we leave Tim Scott, does he have policy positions that would address racial inequality, or does he just hang it all on what he referenced in the clip, personal responsibility?
He's worked significantly on criminal justice issues in the United States Senate. I believe, you know, different people will tell you how committed he was to that and how far he was willing to go. But he certainly has a body of work that can be examined, and I think he would be happy to talk about.
Let's go on to another Republican hopeful, more fringy in terms of political experience than the ones we've been talking about, and less well-known, multimillionaire businessman running largely against corporate social responsibility policies, Vivek Ramaswamy. Sometimes business people run knowing they won't win, but they raise their profile in pursuit of future profits. Think that's the case with Vivek Ramaswamy?
Well, he has lots of profits. I mean, he's a very successful businessman, but I think you have to look at him as a niche candidate that really is the product of the conservative media environment. I mean, if he wasn't a guest on Tucker Carlson's show over the past few years, he would not be running for president in any respect. I think it's important to point out he's only 37 years old, which I think most voters would find sort of surprising. He's authored a couple books that have served as the vehicle for him to be a guest in a lot of these programs. The titles sort of tell you everything. One is Woke, Incorporated Inside Corporate America's Social Justice Scam. Hmm. The other is Nation of Victims, Identity Politics, The Death of Merit, and The Path Back to Excellence. And so those are the things that he is running on.
One more. Former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, he's made headlines recently for calling on Trump to withdraw from the race. Here he is on ABC This Week announcing that he plans to run.
And the reason, as I've traveled the country for 6 months, I hear people talk about the leadership of our country, and I'm convinced that people want leaders that appeal to the best of America and not simply appeal to our worst instincts.
So, Amanda, why is Asa Hutchinson running for president and willing to throw in against Trump, which others are not?
Yeah, I think Asa represents sort of an old school conservative approach to politics. I mean, he sort of soft pedals the issues a little bit. He's not fiery. He's a very successful two-term governor as a House member. He was actually an impeachment manager during the Clinton administration and trying to impeach Bill Clinton. And so he has a long-standing record. It's done very well, but making the pivot to the national stage is tough. I mean, I would say like the previous candidate we discussed, he's sort of the product of green rooms and going on television, not necessarily MAGA media, but you see him a lot on, you know, CNN, Sunday morning shows, ABC. He is the sort of, you know, if you are a Republican who is unwilling to go along with Trump, again, Asa is probably the most acceptable candidate for you. And so I think he is playing for that lane hopes to make it on a stage and show, you know, there's this sort of strain in Republican politics that wants to insist that the Trump era was something that just sort of happened and we can get back to quote unquote normal. That is the school of thought that Asa Hutchinson is of.
Last question. The four we've talked about, Haley, Scott, Hutchinson, Ramaswamy, are they different from each other on any issues? Or once we get to the general election campaign, whether it's Trump, DeSantis, or any of them, or any other Republican, will they all be touting the same lines of thought?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I would say, you know, 80 to 90%, they're certainly similar. Where they would probably have disagreements is more on foreign policy. I think Nikki Haley has been much more supportive of Ukraine than the rest of the field, even though she's sort of, you know, given a nod to the people who would like to get out of that and cut off ties and adopt a more isolation approach by saying, you know, stuff like we should audit where the money is going. So I would expect her to stand out more in that respect. And that's kind of where I was hoping she would position herself as a experienced diplomat with foreign policy expertise that is very much needed in the Republican primary and on the national stage, because whoever becomes president next, whether it's Biden again, we're going to have a lot of challenges when it comes to China, Russia, and figuring out how we can continue to support Ukraine while a lot of the Republicans in Congress seem eager to cut off funding.
Amanda Carpenter, read her at The Bulwark. Amanda, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.